I want to bring in another voice here, if I may. Our correspondent, Louisa Lim. She's in there now. She's been covering the earthquake, and she's in Chengdu now. Louisa, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
And welcome. Thank you for speaking with us. And you've been
thank
listening.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And you've been listening to my conversation with Sherry, Sherry Chang. Sherry, I want you to stand by. But Louisa, I wanted to ask you. Sherry's been talking about how folks here in the U.S. are concerned about offering their support, but they're worried about where their support will go. Is that a concern where you are? Are people there? First of all, are foreign aid organizations able to offer assistance? And have you heard any grumbling about whether resources are being expended properly?
Well, at the moment, we are seeing foreign aid coming in. It's mostly coming in the form of relief workers. When the quake first happened, the Chinese government said that it did not want foreign aid medical teams coming in. But since the true enormity of the damage has slowly been revealed, the Chinese have changed their mind and they are now accepting foreign aid. And here also, there's been a huge outpouring of support by local Chinese people wanting to give money and wanting to help out. And they too have expressed concerns about where the money is going. So I think there are concerns here, but on the other side of the coin, there is a certain amount of pressure on the Chinese government to make sure that the money that they're getting is being used well. And certainly with such an enormous amount of reconstruction and relief work that needs to be done, I think they will be willing to do what they can to show that the money is being used well, because obviously their needs are desperate and their needs are immense.
What is the most immediate pressing need?
Well, we had new figures today which show just how badly this area has been affected. 51,000 dead, almost 30,000 still missing, 300,000 people hurt. So there's still a need for medical aid. But the most pressing need, and the government has for the last 2 days made appeals for tents. There are almost 5.5 million people displaced by this earthquake. And the government says it still needs 3.3 million tents. And wherever you go in this area, you see the people are sleeping on the sides of the street. They're sleeping in these sort of temporary shelters made from plastic sheeting with, you know, very little between themselves and the elements. And the Chinese government is really desperate on this front. And so that's why they keep issuing these appeals.
In fact, out here in Washington, D.C., there's an historically Chinese community not too far from NPR's headquarters. We found a woman who has family in Sichuan province. Her name is Lisa Ma. And I just want to play you a short clip of what she told us, what she told our producer. Here it is.
When I got to talk to my sister in Dujiang, she said they've been living in tent for like 3 days. They were doing okay, but at that time, it's hard for them because I think it was damp, it was raining, I think she said, and food was limited, just like dry food and bottled water. No running water, no power.
I should mention that Lisa's talking about her parents who are elderly, and you can imagine just how upsetting that would be to hear that your parents, who elderly parents, are living in damp conditions. Sherry, are you hearing a lot of stories like this from your callers?
Most of my callers are actually Cantonese because San Francisco have a big Cantonese population. The most, actually, more than half are Cantonese. So they actually don't have families in Sichuan province. Mm-hmm. But I do have a lot of friends, and we do interview a lot of people in Sichuan province by phone. And I do hear a lot of stories, very sad. And actually, regarding the resource, how the government's allocating the resource, We're hearing a lot of reports that a lot of people were eager to help inside China, and they bring a lot of people bring their clothes, you know, the clothes they worn before, but it would be good for the people who are suffering, and a lot of food. But it seemed like a very breakdown of the government system to really how to manage that. It's just that they don't seem to have the capability to manage such a large scale offering people food or materials. So they do see it very disappointed, I would say.
Well, you know, inevitably having, you know, covered a number of natural disasters, people are always, you know, furious because what do you do with all that grief? But so I think it's kind of hard to gauge that. But Louisa, do you have some sense of how effectively the government has been able to get to the affected areas, how effective their distribution mechanisms are, how organized they are?
I would say from my first-hand experience, having been here for more than a week now, this operation, the relief operation, has been immense. And it I mean, if you think about the logistical challenges of looking after 5.5 million people, most of whom have absolutely nothing at all, I think the Chinese government is really pulling out all the stops. I mean, these people have fled with nothing at all. They have no food. And if you go to the refugee camps, the camps for the internally displaced, you'll see that the government has piped in water. It is providing hot meals for people on the streets. It's providing medical care for those that need it. It's doing its very best to do that. And if you talk to those people who are in these camps for the internally displaced, you hear an awful lot of praise for what the government has done for them. Everybody you talk to says that they're very thankful that they have at least something over their heads, and they realize that this is an immense task to deal with. And as well, you know, there are all the a lot of the relief work is still carrying on. There are all sorts of other knock-on issues, you know, the possible natural disasters, the from the earthquake, there's landslides, there's the weather issues, you know, rain forecasts, aftershocks. And there were these towns which are full of the corpses of people who have died. And, you know, so the Chinese government is also having to deal with the danger of infection and corpses infecting water sources, things like that. And all the aid workers I've also spoken to here do believe that the government response has been as good as it possibly could have been. Because if you go to these areas, you will see huge numbers of troops have been mobilized and medical teams sent from all over the country to try to deal with the problems.
Sherry expressed that some of her callers were expressing concern about the mental health needs of people in this situation. And it's been very painful to watch, you know, families obviously, you know, looking for their children, trying to sort of find each other. You know, even at this distance, you can just imagine. Louisa, do you have any sense of whether there's any possibility of offering any mental health support for these victims?
Well, this is another issue that the government is trying to pay attention to. But China does not have an awful lot of trained psychologists. So at the local level, they are sending out teams of volunteers. But the fact is that every single person in this region has been traumatized to a certain extent, because not only did you have an enormous earthquake, but also we've had days and days of aftershocks, which have really rattled people's nerves. And then a few days ago, there was a warning of another possible major aftershock, which really panicked people. So there is a very large sense of unease, and there are varying levels of trauma that people are suffering from. And I interviewed the man who was in charge of trying to provide psychological help to the victims of this earthquake. And his view was that everybody is suffering, everybody is traumatized here, and everybody is in need of psychological intervention. And of course, I mean, how do you do that for this number of people? It's an impossible task, but they certainly are aware that that help is needed.
And forgive me for switching gears now to a topic that may seem rather trivial by comparison, but the Summer Olympics are due to begin in a relatively short time. Is there any discussion now, Louisa, and I'd also like to hear from you, Sherry, about this, about whether this tragedy will affect the games in any way, or even how the games are being thought about? Louisa first.
Well, one thing that's interesting is what's happened with the Olympic torch relay. Before, China's torch relay had been the topic of a great deal of criticism from the outside world, and it was seen as quite triumphalist. And then after this earthquake happened, there was a great deal of unease in China as well as to whether the torch relay should be continuing under the circumstances. And so they have suspended suspended the torch relay for 3 days during the three-day mourning period. And that relay was supposed to come to this part of the world. And what's interesting is that they've changed the schedule for the torch relay. And so it will come here, but it won't come here until August the 3rd to the 5th. So that's just several days before the start of the Olympics. So it does look as if there is some sort of official attempt to link this tragedy to the Olympics.
And Sherry, Sherry, when you and I last spoke, we were talking about how the protests about Tibet were resonating in the communities that you serve and that your radio show serves, and how the community was kind of discussing this. Have they been talking at all about the Olympics in the wake of this tragedy, and how, you know, how do you even think about it after something like this?
I think a lot of people here are not thinking about it, at least not for the past week. They're more thinking about the people actually in Sichuan province is suffering. So it's actually nobody's talking about the Olympics on my show, only talking about how to help people in Sichuan and what's going on there.
You think it's fair to say that politics is taking a back burner for now? Is that?
I would say most people do feel the humanity part more right now. It's just how to offer the aid. And I do see that a few common questions from my audience about this earthquake. One is, what happened to the schools? Is it because the corruption? Why so many schools collapse? Another thing is that people ask the question is, why can the government predict the eight earthquake? And we do see some signs that they may have predicted it earlier. And another question the audience asks is why they initially refused the international aid. Why let the 72 hours, which is the most crucial period of time, pass before they allow any rescue team to go in, especially the team from U.S. and Canada? Sure. Very experienced, very good.
Sure. And at least, Luisa, finally, that speaks to my final question for you, which is, this is a communist country with a state-controlled media. Is there concern that the actual scope of this tragedy is accurately reported, and if the true needs of the people are being accurately reported?
Yes, that's something actually that's very interesting indeed. During this period after the earthquake, we've seen a real loosening of regulations on the media. We've seen even both for foreign journalists and for the local media, but specifically for the local media, they've been allowed to report this pretty much as they want. And it's really been, for me, an eye-opening experience. It's the first time in 5 years in China where I have found myself reporting side by side with my Chinese colleagues. I've seen the Chinese media broadcasting live from the quake hit zones. And the Chinese journalists are telling us that they are not being given a line by their editors. They are not being told what to report and what not to report. I think there are still some areas that are very sensitive. As Sherry mentioned, the problem of the schools which collapsed in the quakes. Mm-hmm. And I'd just like to correct, that was actually 7,000 classrooms which are known to have collapsed, not 7,000 schools.
I understand. We're going to have to leave it there. I thank you so much for your reporting, and do take care of yourself. Luisa Lim is NPR's correspondent in China. She joined us from Chengdu. We were also joined by Sherry Cheng, host of the Sound of Hope Radio Network, AM 1400 in the Bay Area, KVTO. Her programs are Two Dishes in One Soup in Mandarin and Tea Time After Dinner, which is in Cantonese. She joined us from San Francisco. I thank you both.